November 30th, 1978, 2 o'clock p.m. Interviewee, Joseph John Marino. Interviewer, Mary Cleghorn.
No, you did mention yesterday that you wanted me to go back to my childhood days and on to the time I started roaming around. Well, briefly, I'll go through some of the things that I remembered as a child. I think it was Mr. Mott's ranch where we were staying at, one of the places that I remember very sharply, where those two old grandmas scared me, where they were pounding acorns to make wish later, I guess. I just heard the names here and there and some of the things that my father told me, my brother. That's one. In about 1902, we moved to another place, and there's one thing I remember, there were two or three things there. I wasn't afraid of anything in those places, nothing excepting a mean gander and a mean turkey. And I almost broke the gander's neck. I would have if it hadn't been for my sister. The gander attacked me and took a piece of hide off my thigh. I was only about, this was about 1902. I was about 4 years old, and not quite four. This was early in the spring. I can remember that shortly after a big snowstorm. I remember that too. Walking in the snow, maybe about a foot of snow, and it came up to my knees. And then that same spring, I noticed a bush, some little twigs come out of the ground in the yard. This is an old homestead that we moved into. We were moving around. My father was moving here and there, wherever he could, make a home for us. I asked him what that bush was. He said, "That's the Rose of Castile. Take care of it." Well, I remember watering that plant, digging around it till I smelled the first rose. I can still smell, my imagination, of course, I can still smell that rose. But one. Then later, my father took me out into a small patch of where he had corn and watermelons, and he showed me a good-sized watermelon. He said, "That's going to be your watermelon. Cut some brush or weeds and cover it with the sun and wouldn't burn." Well, I still think, when I think about these things, I still seem to smell of the watermelon vine. There was a lot of rattlesnakes around there, but I never was afraid of them. And the winter before that, before this gander almost broke his neck, I had a hold of his neck and I was twisting his neck to break it, screaming, bloody mother. That was squalor. They tell me always bawling, crying over every little thing. I'd stumble and fall and I'd start to get up crying, mad at myself mostly. And I was a little hot-headed when I was a child. I do not remember my mother ever spanking me. My father slapped me in the face one time because I swore at him. Praying, but I used a cuss word.
How old were you?
About four.
Well, it couldn't have been a very bad cuss word then.
Well, just what I'd heard, the cowboys were on me and men, you know. But I'll go back to the Grundike Ranch. He was a giant of a man to me. And we were at the headquarters ranch. And my father came by, and there were several boxes of fruit that they had picked. And my father stooped down and picked up a pear, and I remember him saying, "Oh, they're green yet. They picked these up for canning." And I was on my tiptoes trying to look down and maybe reach one of these pears or an apple, and I tried different boxes, couldn't reach them. The old Mr. Grundike, he came and I remember his voice very clearly and the way he talked. So the little fellow wants to eat some fruit. He grabbed me by the neck of the neck. He just picked me up and put me inside of a box with one hand. He was a very powerful, powerful man. My father used to tell me of the things he used to do, the man who would do with his hands. He was a bachelor, a millionaire. Anyway, from this one case, I'll I've done some digging since then whenever I've had the chance to stop. My mother was sitting outside. This is in the same house with this this watermelon deal, with the goose and the gander. I mean the turkey and the gander. My sister and I were playing outside. My brother and my other older sister, they were playing out in the moonlight. My father's boss and another worker, they were all sitting outside. This must have been in the summertime because it was all sitting outside. And I was playing around, running easily alone. My little sister was playing on the ground with something. I happened to be looking. To me, it was south. I'm not sure. But I heard a sound is the first thing that drew my attention. The sound, and everything lit up like daylight, or brighter than daylight. And there was a rumble in the sky, and there was a huge ball of fire was going from my right to my left over a mountain, and it seemed that it must have hit because the ground shook, and my mother fainted. Well, my father and his foreman, Mr. Grundyke's foreman, and this other man, they got up to pretend that my little sister came running. They went up for water, I don't remember. But I've heard tales since then, old timers, old cowboys, that they heard about the time that this happened. This must have been around 1902. They followed the line of this meteor, a huge one, and it was making a noise, something like later I learned or heard it, something similar to the roar of a freight train going off, say, a quarter of a mile away or half a mile. Well, they followed the line of this in and thinking maybe they would find out where it fell. They never did. These men never did find out where it fell. How far away it fell, I don't know, because as it disappeared over the mountain, at that time the ground shook. That's when my mother fainted. And my little sister was born sometime later in the same house, and she called me in and showed me the baby's side had been ruptured, was ruptured. And my mother had, I'd heard her tell my father that the baby was going to be marked. Well, my father says, I don't remember this, but she had actually the imprint of a star on her, near her forehead and a streak all the way back. The blue leg. The baby. Now, that's one that I know of, and little doctors claim that a baby cannot be marked by his mother. But I saw my brother's baby. She died later. But she was marked. And that's another little story. But anyway, from that place, we moved on down to Ordo Escondido. Looking back now, a few things that I heard and I saw and then remembered later. My father and mother were on the verge of breaking up, but she did have one more baby. That was Georgiana. This baby was buried on an Indian reservation there in Escondido Mountain someplace. I don't remember just the name of it. I think it's La Jolla Reservation, mostly the Indians in that reservation. And I remember traveling with my mother into Escondido. I remember going by the place where we later moved in, not very far from it, to be a little valley in Escondido. There was a row of walnut trees on the long side of the road. She stopped, picked up a few walnuts, cracked some, and I still remember the taste of the first walnut. I was about three or four, because sometime later we moved down. I remember another thing that happened. I was riding with my mother, and she had Georgiana. She'd been born on this place where I saw this meteor, and my mother was very nervy. She had a team, she was driving a team of gray mares, and we were half broke, going down some mountain roads from the Grundyke ranch. They used to haul wheat down. Some of the teams, at certain times of the year, they didn't dare drive those wagons down these roads. Well, these gray mares took a notion to run away. And I remember distinctly, I mean, she told me to get a hold of the side of the a metal arm that goes on the side of the seat. And I grabbed a hold of both hands, my feet hanging over the seat, of course, and I saw her just a blur. Pick up something and throw it on a shumash bush. And she steered those mirrors going around curves, cliffs off to one side, not very deep, but there's still, if the wagon had gone over, we'd have been hurt or killed. Finally, she came to a place where there was a slope and a big patch of chamiso, mixed sumac and others. She ran the mares in there, and they couldn't go no further. So she got down and tied them till she cooled down. Then she turned the mares around and went back to where she tossed my baby sister. She tossed her out of the spring wagon. She landed on a bush, wrapped up in blankets, didn't even wake up. She was still asleep. And we went there. She tied the mare and got the baby in, and she got down to the whole lines and tied the horses, for she was a mare, so she tied them, and then we went down the mountain. That I remember. There's one town about the walnuts on the way back. We stopped at a spring, which we had to cross a little stream and a spring under a huge oak. I sat in the wagon. She had asked me if I wanted water. I said no. By this time the mares had cooled down, or we'd on the way back from Escondido. That was the nearest town. She went down to drink water, and all of a sudden she raised up and said, "Hmm," and hit her hand. Later, hearing my father, they call that a Solomon kiss. It's a vision. All of a sudden, she had a red silk, what do you call it?
Blouse.
Mm-hmm, blouse. And a little tiny scratch on her arm. By the time we got home, her arm began to swell, and her throat and her tongue began to swell. My father sent my brother on his little horse, Julie. Special horse, special saddle. Sent him off to the main ranch to get some help. What was his last name? Well, anyway, he was a Dutch investigator. Hiker. Fred Hiker. I remember him. Many years later, when I was 14, I saw him again. And that time we left it. And I was about five. And then I didn't see him when I was 14. He was heading for Los Angeles. He found out where my father lived, and he moved in to stay from the night. And anyway, my mother on the train home, I heard the story later. She almost died. Poison. He was the one. What they did was they put some black powder. They used that for snake bites, for animals at least. And they gave her something to drink. And then she pulled out of it. That's one. Another thing I remember there on that place there where the goose and the gander place. Yeah, oh, wait a minute. The geese and the gander. The turkey. The one, another thing I remember, there, a man coming in there with a cowboy, one of the Grundyke's cowboys, with a bird tied to the back of his saddle, and one wing was dragging on the ground. It was a condor, California condor. There was a lot of them in those mountains there. I remember seeing them flying around. And why they were killing them off, because they did, whenever there's a newborn calf, and they saw it, found it, they'd pick its brains off, eat the brains. So my brother almost roped one. He was on the flat ground and he chased it. He got off the ground before he could. He'd just been feeding. Got off the ground before he could rope it.
Is this still 1902?
Yes, around 1902. And then about 1903 was when we moved down to towards Escondido to Valley Center. They called it the Little Valley. There's where I had met the father of the man who, Mr. Sadler, the man who married my mother after they had been separated and divorced. That's Joe Sadler. My father was renting from him, from Charles Sadler, from another brother, Charles Sadler. And this is Mr. Sadler's homestead, or something like a homestead. According to my half-brothers and sisters, he was a ship's captain. I don't believe it. Ship's captain didn't leave the ship unless they were taken, the Russian was taken away from him. He was a New England seaman. And they didn't move way back in the mountains. They usually settled where they could see and smell the ocean. He was a ship sailor, had been, what I heard, from my father. And he married a Virginia woman. I remember her. I heard her talking. Could have been Hawaiian. My sister, one of them anyway. Half-sister.
Your father married a Virgueno, and your mother married Joe Sadler.
No. My mother married a Virginia. Oh, no. Mr. Sadler had married a Virginia woman, and his son later married my mother when they were separated. No. He was half Indian. I remember him when I was a little boy, even when I was around 3 or 4. I remember Joe Sadler, because he and my father worked on the same ranch. I remember him, right? And I remember Charles Sadler. And then I missed Mr. Sadler. He was sitting on his step in a little old shack house, very old. The houses were, I don't know, he bought there. I don't think he built. He may have built. And my sister had me by the hand. And we were walking up a little slope up to this house. She went over for something. I don't know, my mother had sent it up for something. And there was another woman there, an Indian, barefooted. Mrs. Sadler was barefooted, with a rag around her head. And then this other woman had just went around the, as we were going up to the corner of the house, there's some rose bushes on my left, on the left side, and the road was beyond the rose bushes that came out of the mountains from the Grundike Ranch, from one and all those homesteads up in the mountains, Pine Mountains. A rattlesnake rattled there, and I heard Mr. Sadler say, "Matala, matala, matala! Just kill it, kill it, kill it!" This woman grabbed a hoe and chopped its head off. I very distinctly remember she cut the snake's head, or the neck, about 3-4 inches back, and that mouth was open. She took the handle of the hoe and poked it to the snake, and the snake bit down on it. I remember that just as if it was happening today. Sometime before that, and I proved this to my mother when I was visiting her around 1930. And I wanted her to drive me over to where I was born. The house still existed. She showed me the house where I was born, the schoolhouse where the schoolhouse had been. They called that Green Valley School. So in the paper that I have taken out to move around or go to going to Mexico for passport, I stated that I was born in Green Valley. They wrote it down. Yeah, I guess it's on the records. I don't know. But anyway, going around some years when we were still up on that turkey goose place, Gander, my father was working for Grundike at what they call the Costa Ranch, and this was right on the ocean front, not far from Oceanside, or Encinitas, where I was born. Because we drove from Encinitas, that's where my mother was living at the time that I visited her, and Joe Sadler had been dead quite a few years, and we drove around. He says, "Drive down this way, and I'll show you where your father used to work." Coming down, right, like I saw that, just like I saw it 30 some odd years before, or 25 years before. I told my mother, I've been here before, and I was here with you. What do you mean? Right here, I said, you gave me the reins, the lines to the two gray mares in the same spring wagon, and you had Antonia with you. Or Georgiana, I don't remember. No, Georgiana. She had left Antonia with my sister and my brother back at the homestead. And I says, you gave me the lines and you got down to open the gate. There was a fence here and there's the road. A little further ahead of the run, a little bit, I says, there's a house where we stopped. And right over a fallen barn, halfway down. I said, my father was standing right there and he told you to drive around here that he'd unhook the mares. We slept in that place upstairs. We stopped there. I stopped the car. Up there, the window or the room where we slept. It was the cook's room, but he gave it to us. And he said, I couldn't sleep all night. There was some strange animal over the hill, I says, making some awful noises, some screams. And she laughed and said, yes, that was a peacock. Well, to me, that was some kind of a wild animal. And then the thunder of the ocean, the waves, which is only about a quarter of a mile away. I couldn't sleep all night, I remember. Now that I remember, and I proved to her. She says, who told you all these things? Nobody. I says, I remember. Then I went back and told her a lot of other things. There were some things I almost told her, but my half-brother was there, but that would have put her kind of embarrassed her. One thing is, it wasn't very long before they separated. I knew there was. Looking back, I said, I could hear arguments sometimes in their bed, and my father was very hot-headed, and he'd take off sometimes. And then the man, I don't remember, Joe Sadler, who it was, he'd spent the night there, and on the next morning he was leaving to go back to the ranch to work. I saw him walk up to the man, and it was strange to me. She should kiss him. He spent bent down from the horse. Now these things were later I found out were going on already. My father knew it. He was just trying to hang on, trying to keep her from. She was a woman who wanted a city, and my dad wanted the mountains and raising stock and farming and things like that. And she wanted crowds, city. Now she was around 15 when my dad was 35 when they married, and naturally there was quite a difference in the ages there. Although my father was a strong man, I know it wasn't because he didn't, keep up his end of the marriage. And one of the things I heard her say later years, because she'd come to visit in Corona, just to get acquainted with the other sisters, she'd gone and stayed with her for a while, so I had my brother. And then eventually one of my sister Edith, my niece, I couldn't get along with after her mother died, my grandniece, she was staying with her sister, with her grandmother, my old sister. She went out and stayed with my mother. My father sent me to get acquainted with her mother when I was about 16, and to get acquainted with Georgiana, my full sister.
So your father kept you after they divorced? Just you, or was there...
No, there's a... We had my brother Frank, my sister Edith, and Antonia. Then Georgiana was living at the time with my mother. She was 14 when she died, and I went to her funeral. She never wanted to give her up to my father. My father wanted her back. In fact, he made a deal with her. I was present when they separated, when he hooked the fast horse that he had, mare, to the buggy. He said, here's this mare, the buggy. Put it in the liver stable and I'll go after it. And here's $20 for you to wean that baby. And as soon as you do, I want her back. I'm never going to get a hold of her. That's Georgiana. Anyway, she developed consumption and died when she was 14. Skinny, thin little thing. I saw her when, 2-3 years before that, I went to visit my mother and get acquainted with my sister. My half brother, the baby of the family, was just a little bitty guy. Henry, he's a real swell guy, a real fine person. Anyway, he's a saddler.
Did you travel to many other places before you started school? Where did you start
school? No, in Anaheim and the orphan's home. From there, when they separated, my father put me on a train and my two sisters. My brother stayed behind, I don't know just where, to take care of, well, I guess, of the same place that he was renting from the saddlers, to take care of the cows and a couple of horses they had, my father had. He'd had a lot of pigs and sold them and practically gave them away after they separated. And he decided to move out of there and come. He brought me and my two sisters. That's the first train ride I ever had, the first time I really saw the ocean. That time I'd heard it, but I didn't see it. But this time I saw the ocean. And we got on a train. To me, we traveled, I don't know, a long, long time. It had been only a few hours from Escondido to Anaheim. And there he took me over to the orphan's home. I knew there was something wrong. There was going to be a change. He took me over and turned me over to some nuns. And they took me over to a table. I didn't know no English. The only word I knew was water. And I heard them talking to me. Later, I remembered my memory. You know? I picked up certain words, but I remembered them. And they brought me a piece of cake and some milk. No, I ate it, but anxious. I wanted to go back. By the time I got over to where their reception room or parlor, they were called in, and my brother, my father, and my two sisters were gone. So I knew that I was alone.
How old were you then?
Around five. Just around five. Not quite five.
About 19-5? About 19-5?
No, this was 19-3. I'm 1898. 2 years ahead of the year. Anyway, they took me another one, a very kindly one. I don't remember her too well, but she took me by the hand. But she'd ask me some more, some words, and I'd say water. So they kept giving me glasses of water. Really fine, I guess they guessed that I did. That's all I knew. Took me by the hand. Now, I had shoes and stockings. I had never, except in the summertime, remember having gone barefoot. I always had shoes. Ground was rough, and they took care of me. And I had little short pants, long stockings. And the sisters had given me a bunch of picture books, and I was curious about books and things, so I had my bunch of books in my hand here. She had me with this hand, and she had me by this hand. Coming by this is wash day at this home. And some bigger boys were working around a boiler where they were throwing wood under the big tub, iron tub, square one, and had faucets to it, with boiling water, heating water, to wash clothes. For the whole bunch of boys in there. They were from crib babies to 14, 15-year-old boys. How many, I never knew. I find out. But anyway, as we were going by, the big part of this place, the sleeping quarters was to the right, and over on the other side was the main building where the sisters lived, and all this front part here was, they were all fenced on the other side, trees in the front, I remember. This is a board platform, no concrete thing. And, when I got to the edge, there was a sister, a nun. I remember her very plainly. She was little, mean looking. I still see a picture of her. She had a great big wart here. I don't remember her name. I tried to forget her, She grabbed me. I don't know what she told the other sister. Apparently she was above in rank or something, above the one that had me by the hand. Because that sister didn't say anything. She sat me down hard on the boards, took my books and things and threw them in the fire. took my stockings and shoes off, and I never saw them again. And the sister, I started to whimper a little bit, and the sister began to talk to me quietly, and she led me way back into the, where the boys were playing, a big yard. There was fences all around. There was a fence like you were playing with it. And there was a little Mexican boy there with a bad knee. He had a kink in his knee, and he limped. And he was playing marbles. And the sister